It's the Let's Go Eat and Drink Show with hosts Jimmy Santangelo and Bill Allred. Let's go eat and drink about. But I can't do what you're saying, 'cause you got food in your mouth. I'm your announcer, Zach Caton, and we're coming to you live on tape from the beautifully appointed media center at Visit Salt Lake. Wouldn't you like to record in a studio like this? Maybe you can. Visit www.visitsaltlake.com. Our guest on today's Let's Go Eat and Drink Show is Tiffany Clayson. Tiffany is the director of the Utah Department of Alcohol and Beverage Services. And now, here are your hosts, Jimmy and Bill.
Thank you.
No, thank you.
I hope I was okay. I really wanted to lean into the plant-based diet, but also the bread and some history there. I knew you would appreciate that.
Yes.
Or trust that you would have. And there's some butter here, high salt, high fat, deliciousness from France.
Yeah.
But
now, are you a plant-based diet? Are you a vegetarian?
So vegan actually, and I'm gonna
vegan.
I'm gonna have some of this cheese today. I typically say plant-based mainly because I feel like when you say vegan, there's the assumption that it's on issues of ethics, right? Animal ethics. It's not. Like, I'm fine for animals are here for a purpose. I hunt, I have hunted. So I am all okay with the consumptions of animals. It's amazing though, when I am eating a plant-based, I just feel really good. I have like massive amounts of energy.
That's great.
I feel really great. So that's
the main reason.
Yeah. Yep. Can I have a little bit right now?
Yeah,
sure.
Please. And this is butter. Okay. This is the butter. So,
all right.
Bread is great, by the way. This
good.
Is fantastic.
Yeah.
This
is and were you a baker there? No, you were on the marketing side or something. The
marketing and sales side.
Marketing and sales.
So we were launched.
Let's get right into it.
Sorry about that.
We'll get right into it, and we're probably rolling right now, I would think.
Okay.
This is Tiffany Clayson. She is the director. Is that what your official title is?
I am the director, yes.
Of the Division of Alcohol and Beverage
Services.
Yeah, DABS.
Yes.
Not DABC any longer. That was one of the first things you did, right? That was your, I'm going to change the name.
Yes, and we were really glad to have a governor and the legislature who supported that. But in looking at a lot of the things that we wanted to accomplish and do, working with stakeholders, working with other people, just felt like it would be a good way to keep us accountable, a way to like live up to something, right? Like also the governor really wants to have state government be more customer service centric, whether you're it's tax commission, driver's license division. So it was a way for us to kind of rebrand ourselves. We do control, every state controls, because every state in America regulates the sale of alcohol. So we're no different in that respect, but it helps us really think about what we want to accomplish. As a government agency, we want to be service driven, we want to be customer service focused, and so we were really glad to have some support to make that name change.
By the way, thank you for joining us today, and I think that with Tiffany, Ms. Clayson being our guest here, they'll be playing this podcast in every one of the state liquor stores throughout the state, and this will really boost this should boost the audience quite a bit.
24/7.
Just put it on a loop if you wouldn't mind. I know you serve. How many customers do you serve?
That's actually a great question.
Yeah,
I don't know what our actual
customer
count is. Like, I don't have that data.
But yeah, that just occurred to me, like 20 million a year. Or,
yeah. Yeah, no, I don't have that. Now I'm going to have to look at that.
That would be interesting. Would you do it through the register sales, like per
we do
ticket
have, we,
sale?
We, everyone, we do get a lot of questions. My mind immediately went to privacy because, we do scan IDs. We do not keep that information. We do not keep that data.
Are people still bitching about having to haul out their ID every time?
I do think some people find it inconvenient, and I get it. It is an extra step, but it is a way to make sure that we keep things very safe. And really, it's for our cashiers to make their jobs and lives easier. So we're definitely okay with the decision.
But so you can't get the data from that because you don't save it.
Can't get the data from that, but we do have transaction data. How
transaction
many transactions?
Data. Yeah.
I just don't happen to know that.
So Tiffany Clayson, and I can call you Tiffany. Yes.
Yes, of course. Please do.
Tiffany, let's talk about how you got here. I mean, how did you get to be the director of alcohol and beverage services in the state of Utah? Where did you come from?
Sure.
Where did you go? What's your career path?
Yeah, so it's interesting. I get that question a lot, and sometimes I give talks, you know, to college students, and it's, you know, did you do poli sci? Did you do business? And the answer is I have a really, what I say is a higgledy-piggledy path to this job. I have two parts of my resume that could not be further from one another, but you mash them up and it's perfect for this job. So I have a 12-year stint in public service in government, having worked for the U.S. Senate, for the U.S. House of Representatives, and then here in the state of Utah for Governor Herbert and now Governor Cox. Before then, I worked in hospitality and retail. So I worked for a parent company called IAWS, which was a Irish, big Irish conglomerate that owned an American bread brand called La Brea Bakery.
Oh yeah, sure.
Yeah, so it was Nancy Silverton. She was the pastry chef for Wolfgang Puck in Los Angeles. She created her own pastry and artisan bread line, did really well here in the States, and she wanted to expand and have a European footprint. And so I was part of that team that went to England, and we launched not only in food service, so in restaurants, hotels, B&B, that bread line, but also into retail. So there it was Sainsbury's, Tesco, when I...
those were the stores, the grocery stores.
Yeah, so very similar to like a Smith's or Walmart.
Yeah. Sure.
And then as I was getting ready to come back to the States, we launched in Costco. So the first Costco that La Brea Bakery bread was in was actually in England, and we helped launch it. So, yeah. Mm.
And it still does extremely well?
It does, yeah. It is what's known as par-baked, artisan bread. And so every piece of bread is still artisan. It's scored by hand. It's sourdough based. And there's many different SKUs of it. It's par baked, so it's very easy to finish off. My favorite is actually the raisin pecan. And it's great with a little Gruyere cheese. You can heat it up. And so I love it. So really, I was honored when the governor reached out as he was putting his team together, right, with the new administration. And it was really an opportunity, like what other job mashes up a background in hospitality and retail, which is what this job does, both hospitality and retail, with public administration, government.
It's
been a great opportunity to really take both parts of my experience and hopefully use them for the greater good here in the state of Utah.
And we have some bread here. Jimmy, where's this
Table Axe picked it. You better get there early, man. They were selling out. I was there after I dropped my son off at school. We have their Salt Lake City sourdough loaf right here that's available daily. And then we have this bread. I thought of you when I did this. And their Einkorn Pain de Mie. Only available on Wednesdays, the Pain de Mie or milk bread is made from house milled central milling Einkorn flour and local dairy from Rose Hill Dairy. Einkorn is a heritage grain praised for its corn like flavor and richness, making our Pain de Mie a great option for sandwich bread. It can also be used in a variety of different applications. Here we're having it with some delicious salted butter.
And it is great bread. Great
it really
density,
is.
Great flavor, lovely.
Nice. Which one is this? Is this the milk bread?
Yeah, yes. It's the milk bread.
It's really good,
yeah.
Really good.
Nice.
So here we are, you get to Utah. And you become the director of alcohol and beverage services. Your job entails overseeing everything, making sure that everything's running the way it should. But what's your overall philosophy of what you do? You're dealing with a product that some people think, you know, and Utah is no different from any. There are people who think that alcohol should just not be tolerated. Mm-hmm. It should not be around. And then there are people who say, I can't live without it. So how do you deal with all that?
Yeah, it's interesting because it is in many respects sort of these competing interests from the prevention education aspect of what we do. We then are the law, right, actually tells us, it says, like, you need to, responsibly provide. So that's what we do through our retail operation. And then kind of on the other spectrum, right, we're making sure to to control it and make sure that we're curbing, right, the overuse or the misuse of alcohol. And so it is a difficult tightrope to kind of walk sometimes. Mm-hmm. But honestly, I think, again, kind of back to this service-focused mission, customer service, really centering everything on that. I think if we are keeping our customer in mind with everything that we do, in every decision that we're making, with every conversation with a legislator we might be having, it's a really easy way to manage everything, right? Because we have many customers are our restaurants, our hotels that we serve through licensing. Our customers are everyone, whether you drink or not.
Right, people who come from out of town, tourists.
Yeah, tourists. Yeah. We're serving everyone in all of the things that
there's a lot of needs,
a lot of perspectives.
How many control states are there in the country? Because I know some states went privatization. Are we down like 16 and a
17?
17. And is the county in Maine still a? Isn't there like
a county in Maryland?
Maryland. Yeah. That's what it is. Okay, Maryland. And, and we have 53 wine store or stores here, outlets.
52
right
now.
In Utah.
Yep.
Yeah. In Utah.
What? How much? So this is a big money industry. Mm-hmm. I mean, there is a lot of money generated through the sale of mm-hmm. alcohol. Do you happen to know what that is off the top?
We're approximately $580 million. So I won't be surprised if next year we hit $600 million. So mm-hmm. we're over $500 million in our total revenue.
Now, where does that money go? What happens to it?
Yeah, I believe strongly we're a real reason that taxes are able to be kept low, right? We get mm-hmm. to help fund programs, public safety programs. The school lunch program is funded through mm-hmm. Alcohol sales. We have law enforcement that gets a direct line item, Parents Empowered. After those line items are funded, everything else will go back to the general fund, which is typically over about $130 or $140 million goes back. And so that is for lawmakers to spend however they deem it's important to be spent. So
I mean, the more money that you can help them make, the more secure your job would be and the happier they would be.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's making sure that as we, do maximize revenue, that our retail operations are profitable, they're efficient, that we are making sure to have that balance of, with our prevention education efforts, Parents Empowered on the public safety front too. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, you've made some innovations all since you've been here. What's been what? How many years have you been on the job?
3 years now.
3 years? Mm-hmm. So you've made some innovations. Mm-hmm. Why don't you talk about those a little bit, some of the you're most proud of, and are there things coming?
Yeah. We've been able to accomplish some really simple things. When I first came on board, we were still using like old school time clocks in our retail operations. We had
clock
the punch.
In? Oh.
Yes.
and
very antiquated, not at all efficient. So you have these store managers. We were having really significant labor shortages mm-hmm. At the time. And so you had managers that were already strapped for time that were spending upwards sometimes 10 hours a week, like filling out the time cards for all their employees. And then is this a 7 or mm-hmm. a 1? Mm-hmm. What did you put here? Mm-hmm. So that's a really simple innovation that we were able to do. We now have these really great, snazzy digital time talk cards. Mm-hmm. With the hospitality community, we've just launched an online compliance system that's now digital. So our hotels, restaurants, business owners in hospitality that interface with us, they can apply for a license all online. They can renew a license online. They can also pay for that online. They used to have to bring us checks and money orders, which is like, what mm-hmm. are we doing in the 2020s dealing with checks and money orders?
Can they order online, order their product online, alcohol online? Because it seems to me I see people in the liquor store sometimes that work at restaurants or something, and they're there with their list.
Yeah. So licensees, that's what we call our businesses, right, that work in hospitality, they are able to do online orders and pick them up in the store. Mm-hmm. So one of the really great innovations that's coming this year is what we're calling click and collect, buy online, pick up in store. And so that will be available
For
consumers, just at a few stores while we work out the bugs. But yes, that's coming.
That will be great. Yeah. And by the way, thank you for upgrading just the credit card readers. It took a long time for the one downtown to get upgraded. The one on the avenue's got it, you know, and you can just go, I don't have to stand here for 4 minutes. It only takes 40 seconds now.
It's great to have that smart pay, those tap and go
options. They were really slow. The old ones were really slow.
Yeah.
Other innovations, though, I mean, elaborate on that a little bit. I'll be able to order what I want.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's just a bottle of something,
mm-hmm. yep.
online, pay for it online, and then just drop by the liquor store and pick it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you'll make that. They'll do an ID check. You'll be able to pick it up and go. If while you're there,
so payment will be online as well mm-hmm. for the consumer side.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's really nice. That's very nice.
Yeah. No, I mean, for someone like me who is a working mom, I'm very excited about this opportunity. You know, we were joking kind of before the podcast. I think you were out getting the bread. you know, it gives me so much anxiety to take my kids to the liquor store and not for the reasons you probably think.
Mm.
So I don't mind them being in a liquor store. It prompts really healthy conversations about responsible, you know, drinking and, mm-hmm. and irresponsible drinking. And what is this? It gives me anxiety because I have a 12 and a 6-year-old, and so my worst fear, exactly, like, where are these elbows going? Like, no, your fingers don't need to be on all of these. So it makes me excited that, you know, I could feasibly, if I know I'm going to entertain people at home, you know, the next day, I can at lunch place my order, go pick it up before I go pick the kids up from school in the early evening, and then just be done with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's going to be brilliant.
Here's an interesting thing about the liquor stores that people don't know, and I think Tiffany can confirm this. If you take your bottle of liquor, and they're mostly still all glassy, wine, or and you somehow accidentally drop it,
mm-hmm.
you break it,
mm-hmm.
you can take it back to the liquor store, and they will give you a new one. And I didn't believe this was possible, but my wife told me, I dropped it, I got this bottle of, I don't know, booze of some sort, and I dropped it in the driveway.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, you know, they'll take it back. No, come on. No, I said, okay, I'm going to call them.
Yeah.
I called, will you take this back? As long as the seal hasn't been broken.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
On the lid. Yeah, we'll replace it for you.
Yeah.
I was just blown away. It's only happened to me once.
Right.
Because I'm very careful. But I mean, so that's still the case.
Yeah, we have worked really hard to try to have a flexible return policy. There are some items that we won't return or exchange just because it might, if it hasn't been stored properly, it may have spoiled. But mm-hmm. we do try to be flexible, like again, to provide good customer service because we do realize that accidents happen.
And a bottle of wine that's gone off, which happens occasionally, you'll take it back.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about refrigeration in the liquor stores? It's always bugged people that the beer can't be cold, and mm-hmm. What is that happening?
You know, that's an innovation that we've been able to deploy in the last couple of years. It was one of those interesting ones when I came on board. There were kind of like a top five list, and that was one of the ones I like frequently heard about. You know, I'm paying top dollar for this craft beer, and I can't get it cold. And I get it, right? I know when I first moved here 9 years ago, I also was kind of confused, like, oh, I can't get a chilled bottle of champagne to go take to that birthday that I'm headed to.
Mm-hmm.
So it really was just about having conversations with the right people. Like, let's talk to legislators, let's talk to policymakers and see, like, why hasn't this been done before? And those conversations were really productive. And so we were able to figure out, like, fiscally, like, we made a business case, we looked at the data, we had been collecting consumer data on it. And so it really put us in a good position to be able to talk to lawmakers, talk to prevention advocates and other people that needed to be part of this, deserve to be part of this conversation. And we move forward with it. First at our Taylorsville store when we opened it. And now we're rolling it out, refrigeration, into all of our new stores. And then we're retrofitting our older stores as we're able to. And it's been really successful.
Good.
Yeah.
Are the SKUs that go in there? What is the product?
Yeah. So we have our beers and our RTDs or, you know, canned cocktails that will go in there. But it's an opportunity for them to be able to get that. Now you don't have to take it home and, you know, try to shove it in the freezer to get it colder faster you can open it up with your game.
Ciders are in there.
Yeah, I'm hoping one day I'll walk into my liquor store and go, hey, they got a beer cave.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, let me tell you. So I know we've talked about the downtown store before when we were doing the walk through there.
This is the new store.
Yeah.
On 2nd South and Edison.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And so there will be refrigeration in that store. There is a section where you'll be able to buy you know, your craft beers and whatnot cold.
Like a walk-in?
Yes, yes.
It's going to have a beer cave.
It's going to be great. How about
that? Any other innovations coming up or something that you'd like to see happen that you haven't maybe dared reveal?
Are there
so first of all, are there things that you'd like to see happen that you haven't dared say? And I don't expect you to say them here.
This is the let the cat out of the bag portion.
Right. You know, I am hyper focused on what we're what we've got to roll out this year with e-commerce. And so that is our click and collect. It's the wine subscription, which
will
also pick up from store. It won't go direct to consumer, like direct to the house. But it's really excited about that and the potential of that.
So let me understand what you're saying there. The wine subscriptions, like the wine clubs, like I can now join the NPR wine club, which I don't know why the hell I would ever do because it's stupid. But
yeah, we've got a team of people that are putting together a wine subscription service, Wine Club. And so for those people that, you know, some people just like to kind of try new things, and that's a great way to try a new thing.
$45 a month, two bottles of wine that I haven't heard of before.
Might be horrible, great. Might be amazing.
Yeah.
Some people just have enjoyed something on their travels, and so they may be able to find those products via the wine club. So I'm really just excited about that. It is going to be more difficult, I have to admit, because we are the middleman in this situation. So in most of the other states that have wine clubs, it is direct to consumer. So it will be a little bit more expensive to be able to participate in that type of transaction because of just how we have to do it in the state of Utah. But you know what, this is the paradigm we're in, and this is what the lawmakers are comfortable with. And so I'm excited that we're working to try to make something work in our current legal context. And it'll be a great way to kind of figure out if this is going to work and if people like it. And that'll be something fun.
Can you explain, and I've never been quite clear on how it works, but some people seem to really like the way the pricing structure here in Utah, and some people just detest it.
Right.
What is that structure?
So we have a markup, right? So there's a markup on anything beer that is 5% ABV and below, that is what you can, of course, buy at the grocery store or at a Maverick or some other convenience store. Anything that is above that 5% ABV is sold at our stores, and then wine and spirits. And there's a markup, a non-negotiable markup attached to that. For wine and spirits, it's 88%, and it's a little over 65% for the heavy beer. So that is fixed. You know, it's not the highest in the country. There are states that have higher markups on their alcohol. One of the neat ways when you kind of get a screaming hot deal in the state of Utah is with our rare and high demand products. So there are, let's just go with Pappy's because that's a really easy one.
Pappy Van Winkle.
If you buy that in what we call an open state, so a non-control state, you might, I mean, those bottles go anywhere from $1,200. You might even pay $3,000 or $4,000. It's all about supply and demand. Here, because we receive an allocated item, we just apply the 88% markup. I mean, some people are able to walk away for $200 a bottle of Pappy's. So
it's true.
That is one tangible example where the control state model works for people.
The other problem is you don't find competitive sales going on. Like the guy at the liquor store down that corner, he's marking down his liquor, so you got to mark down yours to stay competitive. Yeah, those kind of fights that go on, you know.
Any chance? And this is a lob question. Any chance for licensees, the pricing structure to lower there to help their margins on alcohol?
You know what, I love, that is, when I talk kind of about the top five, that is something I was really trying to understand the hospitality community as I was coming, having worked in the hospitality community, kind of trying to figure out what did this experience look like for them? And that was feedback I got often. And so I have communicated that feedback to the governor's office and sort of the budget analysts that work in that branch of government, as well as legislators, with the legislative financial analysts too. I think it probably all just will come down to budget, right? Because right now, licensees pay the same market rate as you or I pay for those products. There have been conversations to see about possibly giving them a break. None of that has been seen in the form of like a bill or legislation.
Yeah, sure.
But yeah, I can, in most other states, the hospitality community does see some kind of like wholesale pricing. And so that is something I hear quite a bit.
Some of the other control states do have models that reflect that. And
yeah.
One thing that was really representative, sorry, Bill, that over the pandemic when restaurants were closed down, liquor sales and purchasing still maintained and or went up to really justify how much licensees really do buy. So by giving them a little break wouldn't, I think, be budgetary, but I'm glad that you're listening to that.
One other item in the past, and I don't know if this is still there have been issues with low wages and low morale for liquor store employees particularly and managers, is that being addressed?
It is, and even though I would say we have addressed it, we have to keep addressing it, right? Mm-hmm. Because compensation is something that if you want to make sure that your workforce has competitive compensation and you can keep your turnover low and keep people happy, you have to stay on top of that. And so we had a lot of support my first year from the legislature where they got it. I mean, we had alarmingly high turnover rates, like in the 120%. And so they created a bill where now every year a study is conducted to look at our wages, our compensation for retail and warehouse workers, and they compare it to private sector retail, and they take a median of that, and if the DABS employees that fall in those categories, if they are not median, then over that next budget year, they are brought to median. So that is a really... been a really positive thing.
That's fantastic.
So we have seen their compensation improve. You know, I just presented to the legislature though, and one of the things I mentioned to them is like everyone has to pay their light bill. You know, people got kids to feed, you got to put food on the table. So compensation is important. But people also stay at jobs other than just how much I get paid, right? It's all about culture. And so we knew that we needed to improve that as well. And so we've worked to have onboarding programs, better training, better development. Like, what do you want to do with your career? Do you want to stay and rise up and develop at the DABS? Do you want to go somewhere else in state government? If so, let us know so that we can help get you additional training. And
are there opportunities for advancement? I mean,
there are. Yeah, absolutely. And so case in point, we've seen our employee turnover reduce to 71%.
It's noticeable.
It's really noticeable.
And I think so, yeah.
We did a survey recently, and it's an employee survey, and 83% of our employees said that they are either satisfied or extremely satisfied to work at the DABS.
Yeah, so, I think I've noticed, I have really noticed an improvement in morale and just because just the interaction you have with that individual working the cash register, you know, it's like, it's, hi, how are you? I'm going, great. Oh, here's my ID. Well, thank you so much. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's just, it's gotten much,
that's
much better.
True.
Yeah,
it's great. We have great people that work for us.
And let's see, new store openings, we already talked about that with the new one downtown. Any other new stores opening? Did we talk about that?
We've got downtown on tap to open. We've got Foothill on tap.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. Foothill. Yeah.
We'll be breaking ground on that this month. That's been a big project.
It'll move back across the street.
Yeah, it'll be back at Lamplighter. That'll be another two-story design, given how that parcel is. We'll have a new sugar house,
To replace the one that's there?
So that's my neighborhood store. I know day in and day out how unworkable that space is.
It's a good, I mean, it's a good store, but there's a good inventory, but it's crowded.
Do you have a different
footprint?
Where are you locating it?
Yeah, so
tell me you're going to put it by the sizzler. You're going to replace it.
Do you know how many times we've gotten that? Unfortunately, there's a big proximity problem since it's right there at the park. Yeah. So we actually have a spot in that new Sugartown development where the Snell Grove ice cream is.
Oh, yeah.
That project we've just recently found out might be delayed just with the economy. So we are actually looking now to potentially move. And I can't mention where that will be.
Okay.
It's in the Sugar House neighborhood. And if and when we're able to make it happen, it's going to happen really quick in a couple of months.
Yeah.
And so that'll be exciting. It just, that store, given the density density of people that now live in Sugar
House.
We just need greater square footage to really make that
store
safe.
They do a great job.
They do, and when they expanded the wine there, they made it almost more of a wine store. And it's a good store, but it is crowded, and the parking is
So terrible. I know we didn't talk about asking this question, but is there any chatter about 2034 and our horizon with the Olympics? Any chatter about potentially having beer and wine in the grocery stores?
So I have not heard any, I mean, lots of conversations about the Olympics.
Sure.
I've not heard those specific conversations. Yeah. I know there are, you know, a lot of people that would love to have the convenience of having heavy beer or wine or even spirits in the grocery stores. I don't know that that's where our policymakers are, just from a safety perspective and kind of where things are. I do think we kind of saw a nice trial run for the NBA All-Star Games last year.
It was right over here.
Yeah, and some things that I think lawmakers were really committed to making sure that was a successful event.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a global audience. We had a ton of people down here activating our restaurant and hospitality scene, definitely activating our retail operations. And so I do think that that was, for us, I know we were really collecting anecdotal data and sales data and working with the hospitality community to understand what occurred during that event that really we need to start thinking about between now and, fingers crossed, Olympic Games in 2034, so that we can be a part of those conversations and help policymakers be prepared for those conversations.
Hold out hope, my dear friends. Hold out hope.
Well, cheers.
Maybe
to that.
Beer and wine.
Potentially.
Maybe even spirits someday. Because you can still control it. I mean, it probably becomes a little more difficult to do, but it's controllable. You can control it
In a retail environment. Grocery store environment.
Yep.
Yeah, it takes grocery stores to buy into it too, obviously.
You got any news for us, Jimmy?
I do have news. We have...
It's time for Jimmy to do some news.
Yeah, I got some news. I'm going to do two quick articles. They're kind of small. One is selfish in my end of the world. The Corps de Master Sommeliers of the Americas is proud to welcome two new members to the organization, Jonathan Eckholt from New York City and Mark Guyadu from Phoenix, Arizona. Mark, if I mispronounced your name, sorry about that. 34, so have you ever heard of the sommelier, master sommelier? There's only a couple hundred in the world, right? And 34 individuals from 16 states and 3 countries attempted recently the Master Sommelier Diploma Examination, proctored by the Quartermaster Sommeliers Americas.
Now, you're a sommelier.
I am a sommelier.
Are you a master?
Level? No, I'm not a master, but I do study both tracks of Wine and Spirits Education Trust, the WSET. That's where I'm an educator through, so I certify people up through that level. Mm-hmm. And then I've taken the Court of Masters, this track, quite a bit. And there's even another one, American Sommelier Association.
I didn't mean to interrupt your story there.
Out of 34 hopeful candidates that sat for the exam, only 2 met the qualifications to be awarded the title of Master Sommelier from one of the world's most influential wine organizations. Congratulations to these 2 individuals, as well as to those that participated. Why? Because you have to even be invited to sit for the exam. You can't just sign up for it willy-nilly. You're invited. So that in itself is an extreme accomplishment in the field. We do have one master somm. He's an older gentleman that lives up in Deer Valley, Park City area, Jeremy Ranch area. He snoops around every once in a while here in Utah. Lurches around.
Yes.
You can notice him with the big test of vino.
I'm a master sommelier. I'm a master.
Yes.
They still have those little spit cup things.
Yeah, that's the test of vino.
Is like that what it's called?
Half donut looking silver
thing. Yeah.
All right, more wine is being spilled in the streets as Bordeaux wine growers join fellow French farmers on the barricades. Struggling Bordeaux, so this is in France, you know, with the farmers, and there's a lot of rioting right now. They're blocking Paris, but the winemakers are getting involved, so the farmers at least. Struggling Bordeaux wine growers joined protests by thousands of farmers across France. Demonstrators blocked highways with tractors and hay, disrupted traffic on a busy motorway.
I was surprised to find out there were farmers in France. I thought there were Farmers were, it was only America we had farmers.
One thing that I find humorous is they even dumped manure and lit a bonfire downtown in front of the headquarters of the regional government, the Prefecture de la Gironde. Vincent Bouge, president of the Young Farmers of Gironde and the wine grower in Medoc, demands that the Bordeaux trade set a minimum for price for bulk wine, lower the fees that small growers pay to the Bordeaux Wine Council. In fact, they also request to cut cuts to the bureaucratic red tape. Angry farmers referring to as much red tape as millefeuille, the infinitely layered French pastry. Always so dramatic with the analogy.
I wonder if they have a future Farmers of America, or you know, a future Farmers of France. Farmer de futur.
Farmer de futur. Not sure where this is going to end up, but if anything will motivate the French, it's going to be their wine. Mm. And that is your splash.
Tiffany Clayson, director of the DABS, Division of Alcohol Beverage Services in Utah. This is like the second time we've sat, or third time, I think, that we've chatted. Gets better every time.
Yeah, thank
you. You're really fun to talk to.
Oh, thank you. And as are you guys.
Well, thanks. Yeah. You seem to know what you're talking about, and you have great ideas for the future, and we're lucky to have you, and I hope the legislature and the governor knows that.
Thank you. Yeah. And by the way, I'm always happy to be someplace where snacks are provided, so thank you.
Okay.
Right. Keep that in mind.
All right, we'll keep that in mind. That's about it. Dawson, we're done, I think. Yeah. All right, let me remind people that you can get a hold of us at theletsgoeatshow@gmail.com. We promise to not pay attention to your email or respond in any way. No, I mean, you can say whatever you want to us, and we'll say, well, that's your opinion. All right, that's it for now. So long.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of the Let's Go Eat and Drink Show with Jimmy Santangelo. You can contact Jimmy at www.thewineacademyofutah.com. As for Bill Allred, it might be best to just leave him alone. Comments, questions, or angry complaints to the management should be directed to the Let's Go Eat Show at gmail.com. The Let's Go Eat and Drink Show is produced by Dawson Dow. Our theme music was composed and recorded by Doug Wild. Recording facilities, as needed, are by the Visit Salt Lake Media Center at www.visitsaltlake.com. The show is a Double Plus production. I'm Zach K. Really? During the recording? No, we'll do another take.